Depending on which side of the growing divide in Manx politics you sit, last week was the best of times or the worst of times. On agenda this evening, a tale of two Treasury ministers. As the old Treasury minister faced the cannon guillotine, a new Treasury minister rose back up from the political abyss. So what can Chris Thomas really achieve in the relatively short 8 months he has as new Treasury minister? And was departing Treasury Minister Alex Allenson naively pursuing his personal ideology or pragmatically implementing what Tynwald thought it wanted? First, we hear from the new Treasury Minister, Chris Thomas.
So I suppose if we start off, you are a new Treasury Minister. Were you surprised, shocked to get the Chief Minister's phone call offering you the job?
Well, it's quite close to a budget, so put a lot of people to some extra work, because we'll talk about that a bit more later. So in that sense, I was surprised. But I have talked to the Chief Minister. It's, you can tell from our body language, you can, being in Keys and Tynwald all the time. We do talk, and I have commented. And I've always said, if you want me back, it's on this basis. And so in that sense, I'm not surprised.
On what basis?
Well, I'm back as Treasury Minister. So in other words, I'm a principled politician. I do know what I believe the people of Douglas Central sent me to the House of Keys to do. And I think the Treasury Minister and I are aligned about what needs to be done in the next few months. Firstly, it's going through sort of things in January, things in February, things in March. And then beyond that, we've got the general election. And ultimately, we're people's representatives, spending people's money, providing public services to people we represent. And so therefore, part of the next month is preparing for the election. But what I said in Tynwald, and you heard me say it, is that there's still so much that needs to be done in the next few months. And I'm pleased to come back to work with the Chief Minister, the rest of the ministers, House of Keys colleagues, to do what we can in the time available.
A number of your colleagues in Tynwald said, when they heard that you had been made the Treasury Minister, that's a surprise.
Well, I mean, obviously the Chief Minister asked me to step down. That's the word he always uses, whatever the context. What he said over speeding up reforms, I immediately went on with you guys on the radio and in other media outlets to say that wasn't the reason. It's that we disagreed on how to develop the gas field. That's in the past. I asked questions. I could argue today, it's not a big thing for today, that it's turned out I was right about the gas field. The territorial seas is a fundamental thing that I think we agree on now, about what needs to be done now at this stage. There are so many other things like that. So, you know, we disagreed in the past. We're now 2.5 years on from that, and I can make a contribution. So where we are now is that obviously Council Ministers was fractious. I coined the phrase that I heard ex-minister Hayward describe as a prisoner in the Council of Ministers. I could sense that the Chief Minister wasn't always getting his own way in the Council of Ministers. And that's because I think I was picking up the same vibe from him, which is that we needed a change of direction in terms of minimum wage policy. And So that's what January's achievement was. It was a pretty momentous change that we made in January. We effectively reversed a decision made inside the same sitting year, same session it's called in our terms, and the minimum wage will now go up by £12.86 rather than £13.46. It's above the UK, but not as much above the UK as it was going to be before that.
And it's not going up by that amount, it's going up to that amount.
That's a single hourly rate. So that's a major change, and it's to make sure that the public out there understand that it's not only full-time salaried employees that matter, it's everybody. And what we were seeing was signs that small and medium-sized enterprises particularly were beginning to need to lay people off and reduce hours. We had to address all the people we represent. February now is the budget, and let's be completely respectful to everybody who's been involved in the budget process. This is not a new Thomas budget. This is the budget that's been prepared from July through till February by a great number of politicians, but even more so by a great number of officers who have been negotiating revenue bids, capital priorities. And what we've done is we've made some significant changes around that. And the most important of those is that we're not going forward with the with the rescue package, the support package for a minimum wage induced situation. What we're doing is we're replacing that with an increase, a substantial increase, no less, in the personal tax allowance. The job of Treasury is to help with the public purse be prioritised, and it's also to finance what's decided, and that's where my attention's been over the last 3 days. And tomorrow in Council Ministers I will be presenting a revised budget to them, which we've agreed in the department today. So, job for February partially achieved. We're now presenting to Council Ministers a slightly revised budget, building on all the great work that's been done up to that point through the rest of the budget cycle.
So that in itself, bearing in mind you've been in Tynwald as well, is a pretty mammoth task that you've completed in your very short tenure as Treasury Minister.
And by 10 o'clock, it was immediately around this office where you're recording this interview, the Treasury office, there were people who were shocked that they were going to have to do that. But I think I approached it in a professional way, and I'm absolutely sure that they approached it in a professional way, and they gave us options within 24 hours, and we chose between some of those options for a second version, and we're now to the situation where Council Ministers will have a revised budget to look at on Thursday. So yeah, it is a great achievement, and many, many thanks to all of them involved. I always took the risk, as I told everybody in Tynwald, and I'm sharing the credit with them, because that's where the credit's due.
And it was a big shift, really, that was made in response through the Chief Minister's amendment of Julie Edge's motion on the minimum wage. It was a fairly big shift in terms of where Tynwald had been.
Very much so. And basically the objective is the same, which is making things better off in everybody's household so that they can have a decent standard of living. That's the objective. The minimum wage is the objective. It's not the calculation methodology and getting all involved in that. I tried to move in December, October, made points, so that this process has been going on, and full credit to Julie Edge for having the courage to put down that motion, which wasn't what's called a rescission motion, so she just needed to win it with a majority rather than a supermajority. And full credit to the Chief Minister for working, with a group of people to put together a good amendment that carried the day.
It did feel in Tynwald as though the Chief Minister had some significant weights lifted off his shoulders. He was starting to demonstrate the kind of leadership that perhaps had been absent over the course of the last 12 months in terms of the debate on minimum wage.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that, but I'm sure every prisoner is happy when they get released from prison. I can't go back on what I've said. That's the situation I'm in. I didn't join the government in 2022. I went into the government, we had a disagreement, I'm back in the government now and absolutely delighted that the public can see that the national interest is at the forefront of my mind and his mind, Council Minister's mind, House of Keys' mind, we have to govern, we have to do things, and we also have to prepare the election because there'll be a new government in September. I started off with January's achievement was the minimum wage. February, the budget is absolutely paramount, and there is March and beyond. And I'm already thinking of presenting that as beyond the budget, because there are some really significant issues around housing, around connectivity, around all sorts of areas which we'll lay out. And I do want you to hear and the public to hear, and that those issues also matter and there are things that we can do. And there are other things like MoneyVal is there. Not only have we been working on the budget in these offices, I've got quite a big legislative programme as well ahead of us, and I've got two bills that I'm asking the Keys to move over from Dr. Allenson's name to my name. And one of those, I was about to move amendments. That's the gambling regulation bill. So I've actually been working with another group of officers on that as well. And there are other bills in Treasury behind that. So, yes, full credit to the people here They have coped with the trauma that was caused by politicians, the Chief Minister principally, by reshuffling his council ministers, but it's in the national interest and they've coped with it, and big thanks to them.
And I guess what you're saying ably demonstrates that the suggestion that it's the civil servants that lead on policy is absolutely not the case.
Definitely not in this case. Another excellent question that, you know, you and I have been addressing is about freedom of information. You know, and that was never, it was never a civil service idea to extend the Freedom of Information Act such that it covered specific publicly owned companies. But I got the majority of the House of Keys to say it should cover the publicly owned companies. But I didn't move my combined vote yesterday because, you know, the companies that I'm talking about are owned mostly by the Treasury, and I'm now Treasury Minister. So to me, that would have been, that's unnecessary. And Mr. Ashford, who was the one who objected to me winning the vote in the House of Keys only in December, him and I are going to work together to do something about that. It's not my immediate priority, but we're going to do it as part of government now rather than forcing government through a Tynwald vote. So that's something else. So it's, yeah, that freedom of information for the steam packet, for the Manx Development Corporation, for the meat plant wasn't something ever that civil servants proposed themselves, I don't think. But, you know, they won't object to it. Civil servants carry out the political will, and to me, the vote in the House of Keys self-evidently demonstrates that elected politicians want those companies to be in it. Now we've got to work out a practical way, timetable, how it's going to be done in the future.
So effectively, I mean, that's, you've kind of answered one of my questions. I mean, you have had quite a lot of questions and I think even motions down in relation to freedom of information, but also in relation to the steam packet. I presume that as you are now the majority shareholder in at least a number of those, you are now in a position to influence how this works to a far greater degree than you were when you were on the back benches.
Well, you know, who knows? I imagine mischievous political commentators would be putting me up there as perhaps the next minister who won't be a minister anymore because of my past and everything like that. But what I would say to you is I'm hoping that some skeletons don't come out of the cupboard of decisions that have been made that I don't agree with. And just as you outline, I've got strong views on how the public should be involved in forming the future of their sea services, and I've got strong views on how we should be developing our brownfield sites. So I'm slowly getting briefings for beyond the budget, and I'm naturally, you know, I want to work with government and all of that, but there is a line that I can't cross, as I demonstrated with the hydrocarbon field, and before that with planning.
You know, because you've been around for a number of years now as a politician, you know about the glacial pace of change in government. I mean, you've only got 8 months left as Treasury Minister, assuming, of course, that you don't get re-elected and reappointed. But 8 months, bearing in mind the first month is going to be all about delivering the budget, it's not long enough to make a real difference, is it?
I think you'll find it is. I think in those 8 months, we'll have to deal with the healthcare situation, and the Treasury's got a big role in that. I think you'll find that we have to deal with capital projects, choosing, you know, explaining to the public what happened on the promenade, what happened in Liverpool Forum and at Ferry Terminal, unveiling the cost of these schemes, choosing between projects in the future, unveiling the cost of all of these projects in the future. In terms of sea services, we are 6 years into a 25-year agreement. We've got an air services that's got a public subvention. I think you'll find that there are some pretty significant moments even in the next 6 or 7 months. Government tends to speed up before an election, and I do think there will be decisions made which will make things better for the people. And certainly when we're talking about hundreds of millions of pounds in the future, we need to have a very well-informed election, because I don't want the bad election and the bad formation of the government that I perceive there was in 2021. Mr. Ramsay made some comments on an interview with Manx Radio about how this was part of a reform of how we do elections and how we form elections, resulting on the votes, and I'm with him on that. We do need to make the 2026 election better than the 2021. done, and we need to have a clearer mandate for what we're going to do with some of the problems. Ultimately, it comes down to two or three very simple issues. One of those is that we've got fewer reserves now, effectively, than politicians had 25 years ago, or even 10, 15 years ago. And we've got to deal with that and manage the expectations and work out how to deal with that. Secondly, connectivity on and off the island, especially by air, is worse than it was 15 years ago, and we've got to deal with that. Thirdly, there are all the issues that come from the changing demography of the island, and we've got to deal with that. I could carry on listing them. You know that. You know that we've discussed these issues before. Just even the local authorities, your Treasury is going to have to be part of the solution of what next after clause, the failed clause 5. And I'm very pleased that I wrote to all the clerks of the local authorities, you know, a year ago now, to explain that this was going to be very traumatic for the Department of Infrastructure and the local government unit. And what a shame that we were making it so traumatic. That turned out to be right, and that's fizzling out. But now we've got to have a way forward for dealing with the civic amenity sites, the reuse centres, housing, financing of housing for the swimming pools in the regions, for maintaining highways and footpaths and hedges and things in the regions around the island. I do think we can make some progress on that. For instance, the briefing just before you walked in was on rates, because we're just, you know, at the end of a rates consultation. So I do think there will be lots more action than you think.
Well, I haven't. It's not for me to think or otherwise. What I know is that your colleagues in Tynwald, several have said this since your appointment. Chris is big on evidence gathering and analysis, and not so good at delivery. First of all, is that a charge that you recognise? Is it fair?
I can only imagine one or two people saying that. Really, I think it's a charge that's encouraged by one or two people. I'm not going to get into that. What I would say is that the Department of Infrastructure, I don't think we did a single consultation. We did an active engagement on living streets around Douglas Central, and if we'd have followed the recommendations of the living streets pilot around Douglas Central, we'd have been a lot better off than we are a year on after the 20 mile per hour project that went way too far. So, you know, it's true, action needs to be evidence-based, but I don't think at the moment we're short of evidence and analysis. What we're short of is money, and I do think we now need to make decisions based on that reality. You won't be seeing Thomas appointing lots and lots of very expensive international consultants for anything in the time I have available, but you might well see some very major changes to all the sorts of things we've discussed in this interview, and there are many more as well.
And I don't suppose you can comment, well, I know you can't comment in any great depth on the budget, but it has been known in the budget before an election for various populist rabbits to be pulled out of the Treasury Minister's hat. Based on what you've just said, I guess that's unlikely this time.
Well, no, I mean, the Chief Minister has said that his budget, my budget, Key's budget, Legislative Council's budget will be about reducing substantially personal tax allowances. That's an important focus of it. So that wasn't there before. So the magnitude of what substantial means is something to be unveiled in February. How that's going to be financed and the implications of that is something to be unveiled in February. But that's a pretty major thing. What we're talking about is using that as a lever to rebuild optimism and confidence in the future. What we've heard in the last few years, I believe, is that a bit too much pessimism amongst our entrepreneurs and our smaller businesses. They haven't been investing. They haven't been taking on people. They've been talking about job losses and reduced hours and not making investments. And I just hope this budget can be the one to turn that round.
There are political commentators who commentate, and Bernard Moffat is one. And obviously Bernard was of a left of centre bent, maybe one of the shrill socialists that Alf Cannon was referring to. He has suggested that you're a bit of a political opportunist and perhaps a bit of a plotter and schemer. Is that fair, or is that Bernard just feeling a bit sore because the minimum wage vote has gone in a different direction than he'd hoped?
Well, I haven't read his original words, and I do talk to Mr. Moffat from time to time, and I always enjoy those chats, so you know, it wouldn't be fair to discuss it. What I would say is if what he means by that is, you know, I'm 3 years ahead in terms of planning what needs to happen to sea services, I completely agree. Who wouldn't want their politicians to be paying attention to what's going on, making sure the public understand the challenges that we face in terms of public service delivery and connectivity and things we can contribute and working out a solution for them in the future. So if that's called cunning and scheming and devious, I take it full on and appreciate the compliment, Bernard.
And the point that I suppose Bernard, and indeed the Speaker, not known to be a shrill voice of socialism, Mr. Speaker, but he was putting forward a proposal to adjourn the debate on the minimum wage in Tynwald this week. The argument which was put very eloquently was, actually we've heard a lot from small and medium-sized businesses about the potential harm the proposal was going to give, but we haven't heard so much from low-paid workers, representatives of low-paid workers, and perhaps if they had been given a chance, they might have had a lot more to say on the matter. You have a difficult role as Treasury Minister because you inevitably are going to face strong lobby groups. How do you ensure in this role that you aren't kind of steered off course by loud voices?
No, it's a very important challenge that you've raised. But look, let's just stick to the basics. The Minimum Wage Committee is a long-established committee. It's made up of representatives of employees as well as employers with an independent chair. They're used to collecting evidence. They invite, before they make a recommendation to DfE and Treasury, they invite commitments. They invite people in. I've often given evidence, or sometimes given evidence myself personally, to the Minimum Wage Committee. People do go in who are on lower wages. The Trade Unions Council does go in and give evidence to the Minimum Wage Committee. That was asserted, but it isn't factually correct. You know, they will take evidence from all of those people and are delighted to do it. That's the first point. The second point is I wasn't quite sure. I mean, the Speaker made that call for an adjournment for political reasons, and it really didn't stack up when you, as Ms. Edge and Ms. Lord Brennan explained very clearly, essentially when the original minimum wage decision was made, we didn't know the budget. We still don't know the budget. The two issues are separated. One's the minimum wage decision, one's the budget decision. We've made the minimum wage decision. Lots of evidence has been collected, evidence has been taken into account, and what we should capture from January's debate is that the Minimum Wage Committee was, in actual fact, disregarded too much by my colleague, Dr. Allenson. He had decided to ignore, practically, the recommendation that came from the Minimum Wage Committee. The £12.86 is the maximum that that committee, which is not a business committee, it's a minimum wage committee made up of workers and employers, basically said businesses could afford. It also came up with the idea that it could be lower than £12.86. So I think the Minimum Wage Committee's value has been asserted through January 2026 Tynwald. You know, listen to people who've got real experience, see the evidence, and then decide. Otherwise, you end up being an ideological-based politician, where the, you know, your ideology determines what evidence you go out and look for. And I'm not that. I'm a consensus-building, pragmatic politician that wants to make better things better for people, you know, and to listen to people to learn how to do that. You are right, you can get captured by different interest groups, lobby groups. I don't think that's what's happened in this case. I kept stressing, and a few others kept stressing, the view of the Minimum Wage Committee, which includes trade union representatives, was unanimous that £12.86 was the right rate for the minimum wage. That had been ignored previously, that was wrong.
And my final question was going to be, what's the difference between a Thomas Treasury and a Allenson Treasury? I think you've partially answered that question, but I'll put the question just the same.
Well, I do think I am very much a pragmatic, consensus-building person. You know, I'm all, the first politician I sat next to was John Shimon. You do tend to remember the first words you hear from the first people in a new role. And he always used to tell me, it might be your flaw, Chris. You won't get really excited working for a particular lobby group or another lobby group. You always try and balance all of the arguments. You stick to your principles, obviously, but you do, you know, you're not associated with a particular lobby group. I do think Dr. Allenson is more of an ideological based politician than I am. I used to tease him about it. I used to say things like, you've got Tony Blair at one end of the council minister's table and you've got Boris Johnson at the other end of the council minister's table. I like to think I'm between both Boris Johnson at one end and Tony Blair at the other end. I'm actually consensus pragmatic based politician.
And finally then,
did you say that before?
I did. but you've indicated a new question for me. What are you hoping you're going to be able to manage to achieve in the next 8 months?
We haven't interviewed you in a room with our war room inside Treasury, but there is a board next door with a whole load of topics on it. So another thing that we've achieved in the first 3 days is the Treasury staff have laid out for me all of the issues that they know themselves to be working on, which they've asked my opinion on, and I've added a couple of things to that. I mean, if we're on the Dr. Allenson theme, one point that I've raised quite a lot over the last few years, you've heard about it a number of times before, is if you read the standing orders of the House of Keys, it does say that every bill that gets printed and goes to members has to have the financial implications laid out to it. That hasn't happened with recent bills, for instance, the period products. Before that, the assisted dying. The assisted dying doesn't even make it clear who's going to deliver the service, how much it's going to cost. And I do think now is the right time for us to remind ourselves that historically, until 15, 20 years ago, every bill that went into the House of Keys not only had objectives, it also had costs attached to it. And I do think that's an important principle as well.
That was Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas. After the news, we'll hear from former Treasury Minister Alex Allenson. Until Alex Allenson arrived in his office last Monday morning, he was still the Treasury Minister. A few minutes later, he was left to contemplate what, if anything, he'd done wrong. The Chief Minister had clearly had enough of being outvoted in his own Council of Ministers, so heads rolled. I caught up with the former Treasury Minister Alex Allenson last Thursday. This is what he had to say.
I imagine that very title, former Treasury Minister, comes still as a bit of a shock to you.
I mean, it does. I mean, we joke that a week's a long time in politics, a day's a long time in politics as well. But I do wish Chris Thomas all the best for taking on the mantle. I had a very challenging time for him because obviously we've spent a lot of time, really since last July, on the budget for this year. That was decided and agreed by council ministers. It's been printed, and there's a briefing of it next week. And obviously, he and the chief minister have said that they want now to do changes to that. And so I look forward to the presentation and the changes that they want to bring in. I'd also just like to say, genuinely, thank you to all the staff in Treasury who've welcomed me since I shifted over there from the Department for Enterprise back in 22 after David Ashford stood down. And they really have made me welcome and done a huge amount of good work and commitment to this. So obviously that workload's increased for them as well this week, making any changes that are agreed by the Council of Ministers.
And at the time of recording, this is the day of a Council of Ministers meeting, and according to the Treasury Minister, the new Treasury Minister, he made the necessary changes and he is presenting the new budget to Council Ministers today.
Yeah, I mean, anyone coming into this role will have their own ideas of what the priorities should be for the country. As I said, we from a Treasury perspective, we've been working with all the departments in terms of their needs, investing in the infrastructure of our island, looking at the revised island plan, and particularly looking at issues such as security, safety, but also connectivity, and really also the investment in education and health that we need. So, you know, I very much hope that, that those are preserved, and I look forward to seeing what other things are developed as we head, you know, towards what will be quite a challenging time, not just for our country, but for the rest of the world when you look at what's going on around us.
Both the Chief Minister and indeed the Treasury Minister have said to me that the significant change is that they are going to ditch the support package for local businesses and instead, also ditch the increase in minimum wage. That's now Tynwald policy. The increase is 5% rather than,
9.9%. In terms of the adult rate.
Yeah. So that's been that's been ditched in Tynwald. Instead of doing this, the Chief Minister and Treasury Minister seem to be pursuing the policy put forward by the Local Economy Forum. Now, you were given a copy of that at their presentation, you were reportedly saying, actually, well, this is fine, but we've already decided what we're going to do here, so we're not...
I can't discuss the budget with you, as you'd understand. We have some powerful lobby groups on the Isle of Man. They all have their own agendas and their own wants and needs. What Tynwald agreed back in 2021 was to merge the living wage with the minimum wage. It came out of a poverty committee report. And that's been Tynwald policy up until Tuesday. And it actually changed last year where we... looking at the weaknesses of the living wage calculations and the possible impact, Tynwald agreed to a different methodology, which would be 66% of median earnings, which is the same as the Low Pay Commission work on in the UK to advise the UK government. And again, that was accepted, and the changes, the legislation to bring in a new minimum wage was agreed in October, further debated in November, and subject to a motion in December. And It is very surprising that 1 month later, government does a U-turn and also Tynwald changes its mind. But that's democracy for you. And as Alistair Ramsay was saying on an interview, we do have lobby groups on the Isle of Man. They can be quite influential because of the immediacy of politicians here. We've seen the same in the UK with inheritance tax on farms. Luckily, we haven't had loads of tractors outside Tynwald, but there are people who feel threatened by some of the changes promoted by Tynwald and pursued by the government, and they are quite rightly, you know, had their say. There are lots of different ways of making sure people are out of poverty. I do believe that people getting a decent wage is one of them. And I, you know, when I look at people who serve me in restaurants or bars and look them in the face, I think they're worth £13.46 an hour.
Did you at any point think, actually, maybe we need to find another compromise here?
We've already compromised significantly. The original Ireland plan said that we were going to move the minimum wage to the living wage, which is £13.73, as I remember. We were going to do that in June last year. So we've delayed, we've brought it in stages, we've worked with loads of different groups, we've listened incessantly to people's concerns. And I thought, you know, when Tynwald passed that legislation in October, that was done, because the whole idea behind the methodology was that we would set the minimum wage for April the previous October, so firms and companies would have 6 months to adjust to any increase. And again, the number of people being paid the minimum wage on the latest figures is only 1.9% of the workforce. It's a really small number of people, often who work in very difficult conditions. And I think if we're going to seriously look at government expenditure, and that's predominantly now benefits and healthcare, and we have lots of low-paid people working in healthcare and social care, we have to look at both of those. And so bringing people's real wages up means that they're less dependent on benefits. And so that makes perfect sense in terms of rebalancing our economy to a high skills, high wage and high productivity and efficiency economy that we need.
You mentioned there a relatively tiny proportion of the Manx workforce is on the minimum wage. But of course, you must accept that if you increase the minimum wage, you are going to increase pay scales across the board, because you have to keep some level of differential between junior staff and more senior staff.
No, absolutely, but again, one of the policies in the Ireland plan is to raise median earnings, and that was key to the economic strategy that was signed up to at the start of this administration. So yes, people will be paid more for working better with, you know, increased productivity and efficiency. We have invested quite a lot of money through DfE in terms of putting money into those companies to allow them to invest in new plants and machinery, new ways of working. Just you know, the ability to go to a certain bar on the prom and order your meal online on your phone on an app and not have to have a waiter to take your order. All that thing is happening here now. And so it should do, because it's a more efficient way of running businesses. It reduces the overall costs and allows them to remain profitable at a time when some of their key input costs have gone up due to inflation, their energy costs have gone up due to a whole range of factors outside of the Isle of Man. But it's also right that the low paid in our society are catered for, are treated properly, and shouldn't have to depend on benefits from the state to subsidise those low wages.
Are businesses wrong then when they are having sleepless nights and tearing their hair out, wondering how they're going to cope had this minimum wage proposal gone through?
No, I don't think they are wrong. And again, one of the things that government has been doing over the last 5 years, and it is a government policy, government's been doing over the last 5 years, is listening to those businesses. I mean, some of the discourse around the last couple of weeks has been that government haven't been listening. I mean, there are a whole series of structures set up to get that conversation through. We have all the agencies in the Department for Enterprise, and quite a few of the people who are arguing against the minimum wage are sitting on those agencies. They can feed directly into government policy. And again, it's the Department for Enterprise that sets really the minimum wage.
But does that indicate that you're just not listening if they are sitting on these bodies?
I'm not party to some of that input. Is the agency model not working as it should do? Again, myself and the Department for Enterprise Minister have regularly met with various representatives of key sectors in our society, including the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce gets a grant from DfE to actually promote that discourse. But throughout this, we've had a lack of the other side of the voice, which is those low-paid people themselves. They haven't been represented. We occasionally hear things from the food bank, which isn't a particularly great barometer of poverty. But the trade unions have been remarkably quiet, often because they're not representing those people. And we know we have those people on the island who are at or very near the minimum wage, who their voice is relatively silent. But they've become worried by the conversations that will cut jobs, will cut your hours because of minimum wage rises. And that's quite rightly so. And there is that need to listen to those people who are directly affected by this. But again, Tim Wall decided on Tuesday to reverse their stated policy, and what that means is that for February, Tim Wald, at the time we talk about the budget, there will have to be new legislation for the statutory minimum wage coming forward, which will revoke the previous decision made in October.
Both the Chief Minister and the new Treasury Minister are trying to frame this whole, your departure, and maybe we should find out, did you choose to leave or were you pushed?
I was sacked. Which is fine. The Chief Minister has the ability to sack ministers that he's not happy with, and he made that decision.
Well, the point I was going to come on to there was that both the Chief Minister and Treasury Minister have framed the argument as an ideological one, mainly stating that you're the ideologist and they're just being pragmatic. Mm-hmm. I suppose this whole discussion can only be ideological if they are also ideological. And basically what their suggestion is that you are, I presume, one of the shrill voices of socialism, whereas they are being, in their view, pragmatic. But presumably they're just putting forward a right of centre economic philosophy.
And again, conversations about left or right in an Isle of Man perspective aren't particularly helpful. What I've tried to do ever since I came into government, both in terms of this administration, from Department of Enterprise, and then being asked by the Chief Minister to move into Treasury, was promote our economic strategy, promote what we wanted to do for society to increase wages, but also invest in the infrastructure and make sure those businesses on the island could thrive. And really carried on with the council minister's line in terms of that, and obviously trying to get the backing of Tynwald to do that. So we brought in some lots of different schemes, some of which have been working directly with the private sector on infrastructure projects, which have been very, very successful. I am pragmatic. I'm also a patriot in terms of the Isle of Man and want this place to thrive. But at the same time, are very keen to pursue those council ministers' policies and Tynwald policies, and minimum wage is one of those. In terms of, I don't think I've ever been called shrill before, but in terms of my own ideology, I make no bones about that. Yes, I am a socialist. I absolutely believe in structures like the NHS, in terms of our benefit system, in terms of a whole range of policies, but those aren't at the expense of pragmatic ways of working with private enterprise, working with private business on the Isle of Man to pursue our aims. And so I'm absolutely happy to sit down with hedge fund managers, insurance company bosses, or local publicans to talk about what they need to succeed and allow their workers to succeed as well.
What's wrong with the shift in policy? Basically, what certainly the suggestion put forward by the Local Economy Forum was, if you increase significantly personal allowances, that will mean that people's take-home pay will increase to the desired level without having the businesses effectively taking the main burden for that. What's wrong with that proposal?
Well, what they actually proposed was far more detailed than that, and I did answer a question in the House of Keys about it. And I was, after meeting with them again formally with the DfE minister, which is what they asked for, I've given them a written breakdown of what they wanted to do. So we know Tynwald policy. What the Local Economy Forum, which is a selection of business people set up by Chris Robert Shaw as their chair, although I understand he's stood down now. What they wanted to do was, first of all, keep the same minimum wage as the UK. We've never agreed that from a Tynwald policy. We would have the same minimum wage as the UK. They also wanted to bring in a separate band for younger people, which is something that Tynwald removed previously. And then what they wanted to do was pay people a lesser wage, but have a tax credit system that would top that up. So the minimum wage wouldn't be anything that we would arrange. It would be at the behest of Westminster, who are moving towards 66% of their median earnings. But there'd be a complicated tax credit system whereby people on minimum wage would pay less tax. Now, this seems to make sense, but the complexity of it is immense, because actually the tax office don't know how many hours you've done or what your pay rate was. So we'd have to create a whole new complex, a whole new structure for doing that. Tax rebates tend to come at the end of the year, which doesn't really help you if you're on minimum wage and you're having to pay your bills there and then. And so there are lots of complexities on it. And again, the tax policy for the Isle of Man is decided by Tynwald. It's not decided by a couple of company bosses, and shouldn't ever be. We presented quite a coherent tax policy, which looked at things like income tax, it looked at international taxation, it looked at the wealth taxes, and the commitment by me not to bring in wealth taxes at all, like inheritance tax and capital gains, because I know that they would be very harmful for our nation. And I was quite clear about that right at the start. So when we come to ideologies, that's one of my ideologies. I don't think we should absolutely not bring in wealth taxes, because what I've been trying to promote is stability and certainty in government. And having the oldest continuous parliament in the world, that's done us quite well up until now. We haven't had the rapid shifts due to ideologies that you've seen across, and I don't think we actually need those. What we need is certainty. People need to know what governments stand for and what it will provide, and we need to deliver that. And that's, I suppose, my disappointment for this week. But again, it is the will of Timwald, and Timwald overwhelmingly backed going away from the previous policy, and I assume will overwhelmingly vote next month for a different minimum wage.
Did you see this coming? I mean, it certainly sounds, certainly from what the Chief Minister is saying and other Timwald members have been saying, that Council of Ministers was becoming quite a fractious place. Certainly the Chief Minister was losing more votes in Council of Ministers than he was winning. Could you see this coming?
Things have been getting a little bit difficult, but then again, coming towards the end of the administration, and there is a pressure there to deliver on our commitments, whether that's policies like the minimum wage, and whether it's legislation, and you'll see now a huge raft of legislation coming through. So I think there is pressure there. I don't think that we've necessarily had more arguments, but over some key issues when people have started perhaps wavering in terms of their commitment, then you need to discuss that. I think at the end of the day, our ministerial system works very well. The Council of Ministers works very well. And I have no animosity towards the Chief Minister or any of the other ministers that are still there. They've got a very difficult job to do. And one of the problems, one of the reasons that's made more difficult, it's always been hard, is that we've got an election happening. And the election's not until September. There's a lot of things we need to do. There's business as usual. There's a country to run. There's legislation to bring through. Constantly now, ever since even before Christmas, people have been talking about, wait until September. There are important things we need to do now. And that's what I was committed to do things now rather than constantly look forward. The Manx Radio have already got an election page on your website, which I look to with interest. And some of the conversations in the public now are constantly about September. We've got challenges now that we are tackling, but we need to finish off that work in this administration. And it's one of my regrets that I won't be able to be part of that, to finish off what we started. But I do wish Chris Thomas all the best for fulfilling those ambitions and our promise to the Manx people that we would bring in the right legislation, we would get the right investment in public services, but also deal with some of the major problems we're also addressing. We've talked about in terms of increasing costs of benefits and healthcare, and increasing demands in terms of healthcare and education.
And that's a great answer, but did you see your sacking coming?
No, right. Absolutely not. That we had a council ministers meeting last Thursday. Have a good weekend. We'll collect up again on Tuesday. I had a whole lot of speeches to write, including a financial statement. And I was asked on Friday to share that with the Chief Minister, which I did. And I've spent, the weekend on the answers and statements and an amendment to Julie Edge's motion, which was slightly different to the one that the Chief Minister brought, and was circulating all that. So I spent the whole weekend working on preparations for Timwald. So I was very surprised to get a phone call on Monday morning saying that my services were no longer required.
So nothing happened in Council of Ministers on Thursday that would have led you to believe that maybe the Chief Minister was getting frustrated and it was
I genuinely, looking back on it, it was a relatively short meeting. And we went through, what was coming up in terms of Timwald, which we always do the week beforehand, and all the questions and some other issues. Because, again, I think the general public and the media will not see some of the challenges we're facing at the moment, both nationally, but also internationally. There are lots of shifting sands in terms of the United Kingdom on many things, whether that's offshore wind farms, and obviously the news has come forward now that the one that we were worried about isn't going to go ahead for economic reasons, really, in terms of the latest rounds of bids for CFD. But also issues in terms of international taxation and some of the OECD rules in terms of financial arrangements that are coming forward and how those might threaten businesses here. So we went through a whole range of issues, and I didn't expect to be sacked Monday morning. But again, politics can be can be brutal, can sometimes be like this. I don't think it has to be, but that's the reality, and there is an awful lot of pressure at the moment on Chief Minister and the other ministers, and they need to find their own way of dealing with that.
If or when perhaps the a minister rings you up and says, do you fancy a job, will you take it?
I'd have to think about it, but no, I've got no animosity to the council ministers or the chief minister at all. They've made it a decision. I disagree with that. I would, wouldn't I? But you know, if I can be of help to, as I said, you know, complete some of the work that this administration has started, and I can be valuable for that, more than happy. I mean, I came into Parliament to effect real change for the people of this country, and I'm still absolutely dedicated to that. Now I fortunately can spend more time in my own constituency, because you will know one of the issues about being minister is that you're dragged away. You're dragged into Douglas almost every day, and being Treasury Minister, that's doubly so. And I have to be very careful promoting any schemes that might be in Ramsey, so I'm not seen as favouring them. And so I've had to step back on quite a few things. Now I can step forward and spend more time in Ramsey, and spend more time looking at some of the fantastic work that's going on. I went to the Ramsey shipyards this morning and went through what they're doing, and it's amazing the way they're helping the kids being educated there, the expanding the engineering options. Went into Tears, which I can advertise that they've got haggis ready now for Burns Night on the weekend if you want some really good stuff. And I'll be spending more time in my constituency, which actually I relish.
You have, though. I mean, what you've said is very magnanimous, but you have been used as the scapegoat by the Chief Minister and, to a lesser extent, the Treasury Minister. That must feel a bit hard.
It does, but if you stick your head above the parapet, as I think I have done, and you speak your mind, and you try to make sure that the commitments that both government and Tynwald have voted on and stated, if you do that, you're going to get attacked, and I'm quite prepared for that, and I think I've evidenced that in terms of going to meetings, stating my mind, explaining to people who disagree with me why I think what we're doing is absolutely the right thing to do, but also be prepared to make changes when we have to. But again, this is politics. The whole idea really is of politics is we shouldn't be having these conversations. We should just be getting on and allowing people to live normal lives. And some of the drama of politics is regrettable, because we are here to make decisions on behalf of our constituents. We're here to make the place a better place and to bring forward legislation, not to fight about personalities, but really to decide on policy.
And yet, the public love a nice big public spat between politicians.
Yeah, they do, and you and I know that newspapers sell on crime stories. That they always have done, a decent murders, and the newspaper sales used to soar, and that's fine. But I also know that the public want politicians who get on and do the job. And what worries me is that if we concentrate on personalities and spats and drama, we devalue what we have on the Isle of Man, which is a really well-running democratic system where people can go up to Tynwald Day and produce petitions that then change the laws of our country. And if we concentrate too much on drama and soap opera, we will devalue that democracy. And we've seen other countries where that's happened, the rise of populism, and where that leads. And I'm absolutely desperate that we don't go the same way in our country.
That was Ramsey MHK Alex Allenson. So what do you think? Is the Treasury reshuffle a much-needed change or a turn for the worse? Has Chris Thomas really got enough time to prove himself? Did Alex Allenson really deserve to be sacked? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and please get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos an geisach rom. Thanks for listening.